Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero I'm interviewing today is Isabel Knudde. Isabel is the founder of Chlorophyll, which is a micro-sanctuary located in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a nonprofit that offers farmed animal education and outreach with a focus on chickens. Welcome, Isabel. I'm so happy you could be here.
Yeah, thank you, Yolanda, for inviting me.
Oh, you're most welcome. First of all, I love the work you do with chickens, but I also thought it would be really important to include you in this speaker series because you do what's called a micro sanctuary, which I think is much more accessible to many of us. Could you talk about how you built your micro sanctuary, Chlorophyll?
Yes, absolutely. I can maybe start by giving a little history of how I started and then, you know, go in the concept of micro sanctuary.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so we had chickens, you know, in our backyard, like many people's, and we turned it into a micro sanctuary actually in 2014 when we adopted our first rescue hens. So we adopted two hens that came from an egg factory, and they were rescued by Animal Place, which I think that was also part of your, you know, interviews.
Yep.
And they go and rescue, yeah, exactly. And they go rescue big scales, hens, egg layers from a egg factory. And we adopted two of those hens. And those two girls were just amazing. You know, despite the terrible condition they grew up in, they enjoy life, you know, in our backyard, you know, to their fullest. And they really changed our life. They get us to learn a lot about factory farming. I started to volunteer with Animal Place, and I participated to hen rescue. I went into, you know, a battery cage farm, and I got to learn so much about chicken care. So that's how, you know, we got, you know, into having a micro sanctuary. But really, it's Charlie. Charlie is a hen that is kind of the spark behind Chlorophyll. She was a hen that was badly injured, and our keepers didn't notice the injury. And by the time, you know, we took care of her, it was kind of too late, and we had to euthanize her. And it's really her story that led us to create our classes to educate people and empower keepers, chicken keepers, to feel confident, you know, with the care of their chickens. Mm-hmm. So this is how, you know, I founded, like, 2 years later, in 2016, Chlorophyll, to really share, you know, our passion for chickens and all the other animals. So that's kind of how we started the micro sanctuary and then how we made it a non-profit. So now the concept behind micro sanctuary, it's a concept I really like. It's basically you open your backyard or whatever little piece of land that you own to a few farmed animals, you know, and provide them shelter, food, medical care, and love. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of animal lovers out there that have the desire to create, you know, a sanctuary. But this is a big thing. You know, this is a big project. I mean, you need a big piece of land. There is a lot of money and time involved. It's really a huge amount of work. And, I mean, you could, of course, you know, support an existing sanctuary by donating, volunteering with them, but sometimes you want to be hands-on, you know, to have direct contact with the animal and be their caregiver. So micro sanctuary is kind of the answer to that. You don't need a ton of space. Even with a little backyard, you can have one micro sanctuary. And really what you do is you use your own resource. You know, you don't have to do a fundraising, you don't have staff, you don't need a big infrastructure. Basically,
right.
you're really providing home for, you know, maybe a few chickens, a pig, couple of, you know, goats or ducks. So that's what is a micro sanctuary.
Depending on what your neighborhood is zoned for, I guess. I don't think I could have pigs or goats in my backyard.
Yes, exactly. So this will be an important part that if you're thinking of to have your own micro sanctuary, one of the first things you need to do is look at your zoning indeed. Chickens, that's why I started with chickens, and that's why they are the animals the easiest to bring in your backyard because most of the city would allow hens and they don't take much space and they are relatively easy to take care of. So, yeah, that's what I like about sanctuary. You know, it's like a distributed sanctuary if you want. There is no one central place. And the very cool thing I like about it being like distributed, it's really you can have one everywhere, and it allows people to do more outreach, because then you have those animals in your backyard, and then, you know, you can talk to your neighbor, your community, and kind of, you know, explain the life of the story of those animals you have.
Mm-hmm. It's almost kind of like democratizing sanctuary, so that if more people did their part, then each one of us doesn't have to do this as much, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, if everybody could say, you know, I have like 3 chickens in the backyard, maybe 2 ducks, or then it's less, you know, you can take care of more animals.
Right. It's beautiful. Okay, so you kind of talked about what's necessary to start. So I guess you don't need all of the liability insurance. Like you said, you don't need fundraising, and you can just start small.
Yes. So, I mean, it's you have really to see them like you are getting in your family companion animals. You know, it's exactly like when you decide to have a dog or a cat, well, you decide to have, you know, maybe a goat or a duck or a chicken. And basically, you, when you do that, you're saying, okay, I'm going to provide for the life of that animal, you know, with whatever you already have. And mm-hmm. So what you have to do, the kind of homework you have to do, you already mentioned the zoning, very important. Mm-hmm. And for chicken, one of the things to be aware of is a lot of cities do not allow roosters.
Roosters, right.
So, you know, and that's a big problem. So, you know, maybe you can only rescue hens. You have to learn about the animal you want to rescue, you know, what are the special space requirements. You know, a chicken does not, you know, need tons of space. A goat needs a little bit more. A pig way more, you know. So you have to learn about, you know, the animal, the care they need, and kind of do your homework about what kind of, you know, shelter they need. You know, they probably need to be predator-proof. I mean, it's a big thing with chickens. You know, there are so many predators around, even in urban areas.
Right, raccoons and stuff, yeah.
Raccoons, hawks, you know, the neighbor dog, you know, many predators. So you have to protect them. You have to invest, you know, in a chicken coop for them. You have to find, you know, how much cost is involved. So coop is a fixed cost, but then how much does it cost to feed them, you know, to bring new bedding and buy hay? And is it something that you alone can, you know, sustain? I think that that's really important to not sign up for, you know, something bigger that you can take care.
Good. I'm getting a good picture of it. Aside from being a sanctuary, what does chlorophyll do?
Yeah, like you say, we are a micro sanctuary, and the cool thing we are located in the San Francisco Bay Area, in the middle of the Silicon Valley, which, you know, for a big sanctuary that would be impossible. So that's one thing, mm-hmm. you know, one advantage of having micro sanctuary. You could be kind of closer to where people mm-hmm. are. So we take the advantage of being close to, you know, where people are, to do a lot of outreach and education. And so on the education side, what we do is we offer chicken care classes. Because a lot of people, you know, have chickens in their backyard, you know, not as a micro sanctuary, but more as provider of eggs. Mm-hmm. And they not always necessarily know how to take good care of their chicken. So the Chlorophyll is offering those classes for that purpose. And, you know, the first class is, you know, for people thinking about having chicken, it's really a basic class about, you know, what's involved, you know, is it right for you or not, and, you know, all the basic requirements. The other class we offer is more advanced, and it's more about, you know, you already have chicken, you want maybe to add more chickens, how to introduce them, and then to do a lot of health care for them on the medical side. So that's one part of the education. The other big thing we do is outreach on all the life of farmed animals. And we do that by going to the community. We go to high schools, we go to community centers, libraries, and give talks about the chicken and the egg industry, the mm-hmm. cows and the dairy industry. And recently we offered a class about the impact of animal agriculture on our planet.
Right.
So all those talks are really to get people kind of grow some awareness of what's going on in those industries.
Yeah. So, Isabel, when we talked the last time, you were saying how you got feedback from the teachers that the kids were astounded. They were fascinated with your talk. Could you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was around Earth Day. You know, a lot of high schools invited me to go and talk, and especially about the impact of animal agriculture on the planet. And there is a lot of facts that people don't know, like climate change and all the greenhouse gas. You know, most people think, you know, about fossil fuel and, you know, and the transportation that are indeed causing like 13% of the greenhouse gases. But nobody is really aware that 18% of the greenhouse gases, you know, are created by the livestock sector. And that's really, you know, shocking for other people.
Sorry, you said fossil fuels cause 13% of global warming and animal agriculture causes 18%. Is that, did I understand that right?
Yes, 13% is all the transport combined together. You know, that would be, you know, the cars, the buses, the trucks, the boats, the plane, you know, the train. Mm-hmm. That emits 13% of the greenhouse gases. And 18%, so more than all the transport sector, is caused by the animal agriculture.
Yeah, is that because of the methane from the cows? What
so,
creates?
Yeah, so this is part of it. So the methane, I mean, you know that, you know, cows and sheep, I mean, all the ruminants have a special digestive system that is very specialized to digest, you know, the grass and all the fibers in it. You know, the byproduct of that is methane. And methane is like 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So this is one factor. The other thing is the fertilizer that are used in the field to grow the food for those animals. And when that fertilizer, you know, goes in contact with the soil, it creates something called the nitrous dioxide, which is like 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So it's a big greenhouse gas. And then, of course, the third thing, it would be the manure. All the manure that the animals generate has also both methane and this nitrous dioxide. So, yeah, so all that combined, you know, makes like 18% of all the greenhouse gas emission in the world.
Wow. Okay, and then you were also talking about water use.
Yeah, so the other thing that is really shocking is when you look at it is the how much water is used in the animal agriculture. And this is, you know, the water, of course, the animal drinks, but it's also the water to grow their food, is the water to clean the barns, and it's the water used, you know, during slaughter and processing of the meat. And, for example, to produce one burger, which is about a third of a pound, you need 660 gallons of water.
660 gallons of water to produce one quarter pound burger?
Yeah, a third of a pound burger, but yeah,
a third of a pound
so
burger.
This, and that's equal to 2 months of showers.
Right.
You know, here in California, because of the drought, we've been often told to, you know, take shorter shower, you know, fix our leaking faucet and things. But really, if you do, and we should do that, that's great. But if you skip one burger, you're really saving, you know,
660 gallons.
Yeah, 2 months of shower. So, you know, you have to put things a little bit in perspective.
I think more people could.
Yeah.
That's something we should all know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the other fact that, you know, kids always react to is the number of water that is needed to produce one glass of milk. So behind, you know, a glass of dairy milk, there is like 1,020 glass of water that has been used to produce that one glass of milk. I mean, it's 1,000 factor. It's huge.
Wait, 1,000 gallons of water for 1 gallon of milk?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had not heard that. I had heard about the hamburgers, but I had not heard about the milk. That is amazing. Thank you. I would love to take one of your classes.
And this is what is really fun and what I think is powerful in doing those talks and reaching out to, you know, to people, and high school kids in particular, because they are in that phase where they want to learn, they want to know, and mm-hmm. and they're ready to change the world. So talking to them and showing them, you know, the facts, help them take the right decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. So I'm going to get a little more personal. On your website, mm-hmm. you mentioned a chicken named Marjo, and you have the cutest video of you training her to pick out cards. So could you tell us her backstory, first of all?
Yes, yes. Marjo is one of my favorites, chicken. I mean, she unfortunately passed away last month.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, we get attached to those little girls. So Marjo was rescued by Animal Place from one of those battery cage farms. So, you know, those egg factories where they are confined in little cages for about 2 years of their life. And then usually after, you know, they would just, you know, gas them, trash them to the landfill. So luckily, she got rescued, and she ended up in my backyard where she discover everything and really became a very confident chicken. And she was so full of life that she really was very social, come to people, come to us, bounded very closely to me. And she loved food. I decided, hey, maybe I can teach her something. You know, I've been into dog training with my dog where, you know, you use positive reinforcement to teach her things, which is basically, you know, you reward a good behavior with, you know, a treat or a toy or something they like, and in the hope that they do more of that. So this is what I did with Marjo, is I decided, okay, can I teach her to recognize the Queen of Hearts from a deck of cards? Okay? So her favorite treat is something called Scratch, which is a mix of sunflower seeds, corn, and there is a lot of very tasty seeds in there. And she loved that. I mean, it's really like candy to her. Mm-hmm. So I started with a cup of Scratch in one hand, and then the Queen of Art, you know, the card in my other hand. And of course, she would go for the food first. And I would put her, you know, put it away and bring the card under her nose. A beak, and you know, she would eventually touch by accident the card, and when she did that, I immediately reward her and give her food. And I do, you know, two things like that, two times like that, and she say, oh, if I want the food, actually, I don't have to go for the food, but I have to touch the card first. And really, in three trials, she figured that out. Wow. And I would put that card on the ground, and she would go where, you know, and peck at that card to get the food, and then look at me, hey, mom, you know, look what I did. Can I have the food now? And that was just amazing. So when I got her to do that, it's like, okay, let's add more cards. And I started with, you know, the numbers, the black numbers. So it's very different from the Queen of Hearts. And she always went for the Queen of Hearts, no problem.
Right.
Then I added the red number, same thing. She always went for the Queen of Hearts. Then I started to add the faces, black faces first. And that's when I figured out that she understood that she had to pick on faces. Mm-hmm. And so what happened when she picked, for example, on the King of Spades, I would, you know, she would pick on it, look at me, say, hey, I got my treat. And I kind of ignore her. You know, it's like, no, you don't get treat. And then she's like, why? So she go and peck again to make sure, you know, I saw what she did. And she's like, no, I ignore you, sorry. And she say, okay. And then she try and go to the Queen of Art, and she get the reward. And very fast. I mean, honestly, it took me only like 10 sessions of 7 minutes to get her to learn that.
Wow. That's lovely. So it's basically touch training. I've done that with my dogs. But
yeah,
I haven't had them pick out a card, so maybe I should try that with my dogs.
And chicken have a very good vision. So they are able to find, you know, a little bug in a pile of compost or, you know, in you know, mulch. So they have a very good vision. And they have a very good memory also. of faces and objects. I mean, they can remember like one of the face, you know, of people or other animals. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. And your video is really well done. So I would encourage everyone to go and look at that because it's really cute.
Thank you. It was fun for me, and I'm sure it was really fun for her to do that.
Yeah. So another thing that I saw that you talk about on your website is about baby chicks and how that tends to be a popular thing to do around Easter. People buy baby chicks. And why do you discourage people from doing that?
So, yeah, so I do promote hen adoption versus buying baby chicks. And the main reason is for baby chicks to be born. So first, they are born, I mean, like 99% of them are coming from some hatcheries. Okay, and hatcheries are those big commercial places where they have the parents, the breeders, you know, in a cage somewhere, just mating and making fertilized eggs. Those eggs are then put like in big incubators. It's very commercial. It's like racks of eggs. It's where they have the right temperature, the right humidity, and they turn them. And eventually they hatch after 21 days. And as soon as they hatch, they are sexed. The workers are able to differentiate, you know, little male chicks versus female chicks. And for all the egg layers and backyard chickens, nobody wants a rooster for many reasons. They don't lay egg. They are not accepted by many cities. They are loud. You can't have as many hens as hens anyway. So there is really no place for them. So what happened at the hatchery is that they kill them as soon as they know they are little guys. So I would say the first reason why you should not buy baby chicks from, you know, hatchery or from this place.
Yeah. So it's not just about the baby chicks that you buy. It's about what happens in the background. What happens
exactly?
Yeah,
exactly. And there is 50% chance that an egg is going to hatch as a girl versus a male. So you're really killing half, you know, of the chickens that you are hatching, which is like just very terrible. And then sometimes because the sexting is not very accurate, what happens is you may, you know, a backyard chicken keeper that buys, you know, the chicks may actually receive a little rooster, and then because it's forbidden to keep him, those roosters are often dumped, you know, either they are killed or they are dumped in the, you know, in the wild. People, you know, thinking that at least they can live a life, but actually, you know, they're just going to die just a little bit more, you know, faster. There is really no sanctuary or shelter or, you know, places where roosters can go. I mean, there's just too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why that, you know, I really do not recommend of getting baby chicks. And there is so many hens available for adoption already, you know, in shelters and sanctuaries. Very much like cats and dogs. You know, why buying a cat or a dog while there are so many, you know, in shelters waiting for their forever home? So very much the same applied to chickens.
Right. I see your point. You give chicken care classes. So what all do they cover, like some basic things that they cover, and how long do they take, generally, your classes?
So each class is about 2 hours. So we really go in depth. So the first class is really for people starting with chickens, you know, like it's called gearing up for pet chickens. Is what is involved, you know, in having chickens, you know, is it right for you? And then we are talking about really the basic, like housing, food, maintenance. One of the critical things for chicken is they need a coop that is safe and predator proof. That's really key. And then, you know, I want to get people having the right expectation. Chickens are very little maintenance, but you still have to care for them every day. You have, you know, to clean their coop and be there, and so it's not like you get, you know, chickens, put them in the corner of your backyard, and then you just get eggs. That, you know, you need a bit more than that. And this is the class where I really talk about hen adoption, you know, and what we just discussed about baby chicks and buying
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. Because, so it's general education. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people have no idea that you can adopt chickens. I mean, I honestly bought my first 3 chickens because I didn't know you could adopt them. So I'm trying just to spread the word so people know about the option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took part in one of Animal Place's chicken rescues, and I was surprised to learn that, you know, the industry discards these hens when they're still laying. They're just not laying as much. And so if you wanted to adopt a hen, mm-hmm. you might not get an egg every day, but you might get, you know, 3 or 4 eggs a week, right?
Yes, yes. So especially about those chickens that Animal Place rescue, because they are rescued from the egg industry. So they are production hens. So they are usually white Leghorns or red sexling. And those girls have been bred to lay really an egg a day. And so the first year and a half, they are going to lay about 350 eggs a year, which is,
wow.
You know, humongous. And then when they start, their production start decreasing slightly, like maybe only 250 eggs a year, this is when the egg industry decide they are not worth it anymore. They consider them spent. And that's when they, you know, they get rid of them. But mm-hmm. 250 eggs a year is still a huge number of eggs.
It is.
And so this is why, you know, if somebody wants chickens in their backyard for their eggs, this is, you know, an option. You do 2 things at the same time. You provide, you know, a place for that hen to retire, I mean, to be safe and retire. And you could still enjoy, you know, her eggs for, you know, a long time.
Yeah, that participating in that one rescue, that really changed my heart about the whole thing. And actually, then I stopped eating eggs completely because I didn't want to support the industry at all.
Yeah, well, so this is exactly how I started. I mean, I got my first hen because, you know, I was vegetarian at the time and you know, I wanted to know where my eggs come from and that there was no, you know, cruelty in it. I didn't mm-hmm. thought about the baby chicks at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I started, you know, rescuing chicken with Animal Place, I went into one of those battery cage farms, and that made me, you know, stop eating eggs altogether. Just mm-hmm. too awful. And I think if a lot of people would know what's going on, they would do the same.
Yeah, I think so too. I have one last question for you. So if someone isn't in the Bay Area near you, then do you have any online chicken care classes or books that you recommend?
So my website, chlorophyll.org, and it's spelled chlorophyll.org, is mm-hmm. actually a huge source of information. There is a resource tab where there is a lot of links to, you know, good books, good online information, where you can learn a lot. There is videos. We have a YouTube channel where there is little videos on how to do certain things, you know, in chicken care. And then we have also a newsletter, a monthly newsletter, where every month we talk about a different topic, and you can find the archive also on the website. And that contains, you know, tons of information for chicken keepers. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I was browsing through there, and it's really thorough. It's a really nice website and cute videos.
Thank you. Thank you. Trying to do it fun and, you know, informative at the same time.
Yeah. Isabel Knudis, thank you so much for your time. And I also want to thank our listeners and encourage them to go to your website at chlorophyll.org. That's chlorophyll.org. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to speaking with you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Yolanda.